I'd like to have you join me in a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Like they say on the airlines, this is one I'm reviewing the past steps 4 and 5. If steps 4 and 5 are not on your agenda this morning, we suggest you find the other room. Bridget, do you want to read the welcome, please?
Sure. We welcome you to the Al-Anon. We welcome you to the Al-Anon Alateen Family Group and hope you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. We who live or have lived with the problem of alcoholism understand as perhaps few others can. We, too, were lonely and frustrated, but in Al-Anon and Alateen we discover that no situation is really hopeless and that it is possible for us to find contentment and even happiness, whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. We urge you to try our program. It has helped many of us find solutions that lead to serenity. So much depends on our own attitudes, and as we learn to place our problem in its true perspective, we find it loses its power to dominate our thoughts and our lives. The family situation is bound to improve as we apply the Al-Anon ideas. Without such spiritual help, living with an alcoholic is too much for most of us. Our thinking becomes distorted by trying to force solutions, and we become irritable and unreasonable without knowing it. The Al-Anon program is based on the 12 steps adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous, which we try little by little, one day at a time, to apply to our lives along with our slogans and the Serenity Prayer. The loving interchange of help among members and daily reading of Al-Anon literature thus make us ready to receive the priceless gift of serenity. Anonymity is an important principle of the Al-Anon program. Everything that is said here in the group meeting and member to member must be held in confidence. Only in this way can we feel free to say what is in our minds and hearts, for this is how we help one another in Al-Anon.
Okay. Thank you. Some normal announcements. There may be some who are not familiar with our traditions of personal anonymity at the public level. After 30 years, you should get anonymity right. If so, we respectfully ask that no Al-Anon or Alateen or AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published or broadcast reports of our meeting. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other families and friends of alcoholics. And our tradition of anonymity requires us that Al-Anon and Alateen principles come before personalities. We really don't have a moderator. Bridget and I are kind of sharing this meeting, and what we've given you this morning, the little slips, as I said, came from an Al-Anon fortune cookie. Actually, it came out of the forum back in April, and I think to set the term of the meeting, the purpose of my first step is not to abuse myself, but to research myself. There's a story that says, those who fail to recognize history are doomed to repeat it. And that's why this meeting is aimed in that direction called Reviewing the Past. So, Bridget, I'm going to ask you to come up first and tell us what you think about reviewing the past.
Thank you, Roland. Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and very, very grateful to be here. I have to just quickly say I'm very, very nervous. I'm a nervous public speaker, so I just wanted to get that out there. Thank you. In thinking about my fourth and fifth step, what came to mind was that it was a beginning. It was the beginning of a lot of different things. And one thing was, although I had worked, you know, step three prior to step four, I really felt like step four and then step five was really letting go, and really a lot of that surrender took place in my fourth and then my fifth step, because there was a lot of times I wasn't willing to sit down and look at the fourth step. I think primarily because I just had so many resentments. If I had met you in my life, I had a resentment against you, and it was just hard to be, I felt, wallowing in negativity. And at that point, I couldn't see, you know, the other side of the mountain, which was that this was going to lead me to a better place in my recovery and in my life, in my relationships with everybody around me. I just saw, you know, what was right in front of me at that moment. But it was, I remember, I was on a silent retreat for women with my sponsor, and I had done the inventory, and I needed to schedule some time to do my fifth step with her, and their time was just running out. The weekend was going, you know, passing by, and I had one more window of opportunity, and I knew I wanted to get it done on this retreat. This is my goal. I wanted to get it done on this weekend. And she was getting up to leave the dinner table, and this would have been it that night. And I wasn't saying anything, and finally just said, God help me. And I just felt like I was leaping off a cliff, kind of free-falling, and said, Cindy, can we do this tonight? And she said yes. And, you know, doing that fifth step was, well, first let me back up a second, looking at the past. The past is it's my spiritual foundation. It's what has made me who I am today. And I don't regret the past today. You know, there was a time when I was new to Al-Anon when I wallowed in a lot of, almost a depression, a lot of sadness, a lot of grief over what had happened in my family. You know, and I had to go through that. That was okay. I mean, I wasn't, you know, sometimes we talk about the pity pot. And I think sometimes that can sound a little harsh, because that was part of my process. That was part of my recovery, just being sad and looking at that. In fact, there was, you know, one time I went over to my mother's house when she wasn't there. I had a key, and I went in, and I went through all the old family photo albums, and I just bawled. You know, that was just something I needed to do. I needed to grieve the past. I needed to look at what alcoholism had done to our family and to realize my mother and father were doing the very best they could. And they, when they were young and married, they only had dreams of happiness, and they only wanted the best for their children. My dad didn't know he was marrying an alcoholic. My mom didn't probably know at the time she was an alcoholic. They didn't know what kind of destruction was going to occur in the family as a result of that disease. And that was the beginning of me having more compassion for the alcoholic, and for me not blaming anymore, you know, kind of growing up and not being that little girl anymore who blames, you know, mom and dad for the things that happened in my childhood and for the person I am today. I love the theme of this, I am responsible, because that's what I feel today. I can't blame the past. I can't blame other people for things that are going wrong with me or my irritability. Just recently, you know, walking through the convention hall the other night, I was so irritable, and I'm seeing all this, I am responsible, I am responsible. And there was this voice screaming in my head saying, it's you, you, you. It's not, you know, anybody else. It's my responsibility. In any case, when I did that fifth step, like I said, it was the beginning of letting go and surrendering and not holding on to all those secrets. You know, we say we are as sick as our secrets, and for me that was absolutely true. It was the beginning of my trusting in another human being and my beginning to be able to have an intimate relationship with another human being. Although I had lots of friends and a busy social life, I don't think I ever had true intimacy with another girlfriend or any relationship, you know, romantic relationship I was ever in. And that was the beginning of my getting real with somebody and saying, this is who I am, good and bad, petty and negative, judgmental. Here it is, all of me. And, you know, my sponsor at the end of that, you know, just gave me a hug and told me she loved me. And, you know, I could let a lot of that go and not feel burdened by that. It was like another layer of that onion just coming off, and another layer of healing could take place after that fifth step. It was also the beginning of learning how to share with other people, not just my sponsor. I became, I think, more open. And I used to think that a lot of people in the world around me, friends or whoever, I'd say, well, she's a very closed person. They're not very open. And really, I think a lot of that was me. I didn't open up myself to other people, so why would they want to feel safe to be their authentic self with me when I really wasn't being authentic? And I think part of that was just I had all this garbage from my past that I didn't know how to talk about and had a very strong desire to talk about with somebody, but I didn't feel they could understand. So consequently, I think I went around with a big wall around me all the time, and I kept people at arm's length, even the people that were supposedly closest to me. It was the beginning, too, of my being able to feel my right place in this world, and that I wasn't less than, I wasn't better than, I was just one of you. I was just a woman among people. And that was really important to me, because I walked around always comparing myself to other people. And that fifth step was just the beginning of leveling out that playing field. Today I can look people who are in positions of authority in the eye. I couldn't do that before. Bosses at work, you know, I did the sort of darting eye thing. Anybody who I perceived to be in a position of authority over me, I had a real hard time with. And I had a chip on my shoulder, too. I was very, very defensive. You know, when I first met my husband, he at one point said to me, this was pre-Al-Anon, you know, I have a real hard time talking to you. I can't, you're just so defensive about so many things. And that was true. And the fifth step just kind of allowed me to be more comfortable with who I am. And if you have a criticism of me or an opinion about me, you know, I can just take what I like and leave the rest. That's okay. I'm not saying it doesn't always still hurt, but I can take a step back from that and think about it, and not have it wound me so deeply anymore when people have opinions. The other thing was with the fifth step was, you know, I get to take responsibility, like I said, for my part in things. When things go wrong at work, with my relationship with my husband, with my siblings, I get to look at what is my part and what is your part, what is my business to fix and what isn't. And in the beginning, when I heard that, prior to doing a fourth step, I thought, I don't want to look at my part. I don't want to be responsible. And what I didn't know, what you know, happened when I got to the other side of that, was that it's very freeing. It's wonderful to be able to look at me and change me, because that's the thing. I do have power to change a lot of times. I can't change what you're doing or how you feel. I have no power over that. But when I can change me, it's very freeing. It gives me a feeling of serenity to be able to look at myself. you know, the other thing I just want to mention is I was not a perfect example of doing a fearless and thorough moral inventory. When I first did a fourth step years ago, I didn't share everything with my sponsor. I did the best I could at the time, but there were some things that I think I minimized in my mind. Oh, that's not that big a deal. She doesn't need to know that. And I didn't share everything with her. And I'm not sure if that belonged on the, you know, sexual relations aspect of my inventory or the where exactly it fit. But, you know, not that long ago, very recently actually, I heard somebody share at an open meeting about something that had happened in her family, and something very similar to what had happened in my family. And I had carried this around for years and years and years, very ashamed of it. I'd never talked about it. And at this open meeting, I went up to this woman afterward and said, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. And that, I think, was sort of the last straw. I had had these sort of gentle nudges. I believe that was God in my life sort of, you know, pushing me toward, you need to share this. You need to do something with this. And I didn't know, like I said before, I didn't know it was on the other side of that. I just knew I needed to share it. And I'd heard enough AA speakers and Al-Anon speakers say, if you got one of those take it to the grave secrets, share it anyway. I'd heard that over and over, and yet I could not share this. And finally, I made an appointment with her after a meeting to share it with her, and I said, I got something I got to tell you, and she said, okay. And actually, I had shared it with my husband, so I did share it with another human being, and, you know, he kind of said, that's it. He didn't think it was that big a deal. But, you know, to me, it was very, very shameful. And I think it's like a lot of our secrets. We think they are such a big deal, but when you tell it to somebody else, it's just not. And so, anyway, I told her, and she told me she loved me, and she said, wow, you've been carrying that around for a really long time, and I'm so glad you shared that with me. And what's happened on the other side of that, a couple things. One is that my relationship with her has gone to a new level. Once again, it's like another layer of that healing has taken place. And You know, I realize there are just things that happen in alcoholic families that, you know, it doesn't mean I'm a rotten or a disgusting person. It's just something that happened. And the other thing that happened is that I had, for years, I had had dreams that were very vivid and very kind of gross. And I shared it with my husband one time. I shared them all the time when I have these dreams. And he said, I don't think that's normal for people to have those kinds of dreams so frequently. And I said, really? I thought everyone had these dreams. And he said, I never have. So apparently he did a more thorough inventory on his fourth step. But anyway, I have not had a single one of those dreams since I shared that with my sponsor. And, you know, I told my sister, too, not about the actual event, but I told her about the dreams, and I think she had read a book or something and said, those were shame-based dreams. And, you know, that shame is gone. I mean, it's just, it's not a big deal. And I can't believe how many years I carried that around. We're talking like 6 years. Or so. Well, I mean, prior to that, I was carrying it around since, you know, teenage years. But then all those years I was with my sponsor and I never shared it with her. So, you know, it's a very, very powerful thing, this fourth and fifth step. I think that's all I have to share. And with that, I will pass. Thanks very much.
When we talk about reviewing the past, it helps to tell me who I am. And if I can find out who I am, I can take the steps I need to correct it, which is why we talk about the fourth step. I grew up as a child with non-drinking parents. There was a younger brother, 6 years, and a younger sister, 10 years. It was the Depression. It was World War II. We didn't have a whole lot of goods or much of anything. But as the younger or the oldest child, and my mother had TB, she had spinal meningitis, she had a litany of other things. I remember her being institutionalized for some of those at one point in my early years. So I did a lot of things that the family depended on. I became the family caretaker. We've all heard that word. And as such, was always trying to do things for my immediate family, which sets you up as a trap, as some of you will recognize. I went to college in the evening as well as working, so it kept me single for a very long time. And when I was 28, I finally married a gal who was from way out of town, which was fine. And we never drank when we were dating. It turned out to be not that way very long, and I had a very tough time struggling with this lady. I was in purchasing at that point, and every year when you vendors came around at Christmas, they gave you bottles, and we stored them in a cabinet in the basement because I didn't use them. And I went down there one day, and they were all empty. So, surprise, I went off to a local sign I'd seen on National Council, and they sent me to an Al-Anon meeting, which was my first shot. And like I said, I got these 12 steps. I'm going to take them home. I'll memorize them, and things will be better. And 6 months later, I came back and said, So I've been at it since. Learning to deal with the other person was essentially trying to end up dealing with myself. I was going to try and take care of this lady like I'd taken care of my own family, thinking things would be fine. But they weren't, and they didn't become that way. I sent her to 3 rehabs and ended up getting custody of my 2 kids 30, 40 years ago when men, generally speaking, didn't get custody of their kids. And as somebody said to me, you may save her life by getting divorced. And in fact, she lived 3 years after it and died of alcoholism. As the oldest child, I wasn't a disciplinary problem because I was too damn busy taking care of things in the family. When my own child, or children, I had 2, a boy and a girl, finally were free for me to deal with because they didn't have to deal with the mother anymore, I thought I could reconstitute them as what I was when I was their age. That doesn't work well either. My son had discovered pot, pills, and alcohol. And sort of dealt with his life in the way he wanted to, as long as he lived with us. Now, I wanted him to finish high school. And the state says, well, you got to take care of him until he's finished. Well, he ended up at the local YMCA. He would ride his bicycle to our house, get on the school bus, go to school, come back, pick up his bike, go to the YMCA. We paid for his food. He had to get a job and pay for his rent. And today he's in his middle 40s and he's reasonable. I don't think he would have been otherwise. So for those of you who might be concerned about dealing with a child, we found it worked for us. Now, that goes back a step because eventually there was a remarriage. I was involved as an Alateen sponsor for about 5 years. In New Jersey, we had a meeting of the Alateen sponsors and the group representatives once a month. I went to one of these meetings, and being a typical Island person, I went the wrong Friday. There was a group there putting together the New Jersey Convention. They had a problem with a 16-millimeter sound projector, which doesn't even exist anymore in most cases. I said, I've got one. They said, good, you're on the committee. We went to the convention, and my now wife asked me to be the co-sponsor for the convention the next year, although she complained about it to the person who was the present chairman because she said I was a little flaky, which I probably was. I was trying to keep two kids going and work full-time and keep the house going. And at the conclusion of the alcoholic deal, I had a pile of trash in the basement about that deep, which eventually we had to use shovels to get rid of because everything that my wife had dealt with up to that point went in the basement and just dumped. And I couldn't keep up with getting it out to the trash fast enough. About a month after that, we were back at this GR sponsor meeting on the right night. And some drunk, it shows you how alcohol works, hit a pole outside the church where we were meeting, put out the lights, and my now wife was sitting next to me. She still wasn't very fond of me, and I wasn't too sure about her either. And the lights went out, and I had a flashlight in the car, and we had kids all over this church. So I said, here, take my coat. I'll see you at the diner. I'm going to go through the church and make sure there's no kids left. So when we got to the diner, she had my coat, so I sat next to her and started to say something about, I'm going fishing next week. And she said, oh, I like to fish. Well, we made arrangements to fish for about 4 weeks in a row, and every week it rained. My higher power was doing things for us. By that time, it was December, when by that time in that part of the country, there's no fish anyhow. And the following March, we got married. I'm going to backtrack a little bit there because in dealing with that, prior to that, when I was single, there were a couple of young ladies in the program I was interested in. And the one that was of particular interest had a daughter about the same age as my daughter. And I eventually arranged a date with her. I went to her home to pick her up, and there were some surprises. My first wife lived with her mother. She brought home her paycheck. Her mother did all the housework, all the cleaning, all the managing of the house. This lady brought home her paycheck. Her mother ran the house and did all the things that were necessary to keep the house going. And there was a woman in the meeting who, we talk about those things where a person says something to you in some way that means something that you would never connect with that person at all. And she knew me, and she knew this lady. And I said to her, you know, I'm kind of interested. She said, Roland, do you really need another daughter? And I didn't take it as meaning this lady's daughter. I took it as meaning the lady. Because my attraction was to women that I thought were daughters. It was a father-daughter relationship rather than an equal. When one walks into the room today, my present wife will nudge me and say, there's one there. And I find that one of the things I learned from my history, as we say in Florida when I go down there, I had a defective picker. And I would tend to pick these very dependent people who were carbon copies of what I had done the first time. Somebody said to me, you will pick the first time what you picked the last time. Mac, the lady who said to me, do you really need another daughter? Had been married 4 times to 4 successive alcoholics. So the one thing my history taught me was I was fond of these defendant people. I got my attaboys from the family. I got my attaboys from having these people that I could have dependent upon me. This was not good for me, and I had to learn to, from my inventory, if you will, from looking at the past, this was the case I needed. And it was the same thing with the child. I had to learn that I was going to struggle with him to make him what I thought he should be, in some sense, getting through high school, at least. And as a result, he turned out to be what he was. And when it was suggested we put him out, I wasn't really happy because I thought I could fix him. But by then and now, I discovered you didn't fix others. You tried damn hard to fix yourself and weren't always successful. I think in step 6 we talk about defects. A defect was picking the wrong people. A defect was taking my son and trying to fix him. And all of those defects, which sound so negative in the step 6, to me are regarded as defects. Was it a defect I was attracted to the wrong people? Yes, it was. But it's not such a negative defect. It's a matter of being aware of who you are, why you're here, and what you're doing for yourself. And when I'm aware of it, I can take steps to fix it. And if I find myself starting in that direction, hopefully that little bit up here will start to say, hey, you're going the wrong way. Quit it. And we've had that with some grandkids. In my case, we have some grandchildren who are alcoholic. We have children who are alcoholic. I subsequently found out my first wife's father was alcoholic. So you've got that nice genetic curve that follows through generation after generation. It ain't my job to fix them. I didn't break it, I don't got to fix it. So to me, that's a big part of reviewing the past. If I can keep those things in mind, I know where I am and who I am, and I can work on the things that need to be fixed. And that, to me, is the worthwhile part of keeping coming back and sharing the meetings. As far as step 5 is concerned, I can discuss them with the present spouse. I found one thing that helped me a lot when I needed to make a decision was to go to my meeting and say, I need to decide on this. I need to decide on it in the next week or two. Or I have made this decision. I would say it at the meeting. And I knew I couldn't go back to the meeting until I'd either made the decision or carried through on it. And it was a big help to me in going to that meeting and making this because I knew that I could then follow through. And that, to me, did a lot for me in taking care of telling people what I needed to fix in me and what decisions I needed to make. I found that a very valuable asset. I know that the people who walked in didn't get a chance to see the little fortune cookie pieces I have here. If you haven't gotten them, there should be some in the envelope left. And they're going to tell you that the purpose of your step is not to abuse yourself, but to research yourself. And that research and your ability to correct those defects that I find were valuable to me. I hope they're valuable to you. Thank you. Oh, one closing note. I don't think it's come up too often in this meeting, but upon remarrying and having lived with an alcoholic for 18 years, intimacy, sex, if you will, was not a very rewarding experience. And it took several years of work by my present spouse, a lot of patience, to restore my faith in intimacy and sex. So if you're in that position, it's going to take a lot of work to overcome the damage that's done in living with an alcoholic person. So don't despair. It does come back. Thank you. Now you're free to come up and let us hear from you. We ask that you use the mic because it is being recorded. And if not, I can always pass the mic over. You come right up here and We'd love to hear from you. We need your name, where you're from, and I challenge you in talking about your four steps to talk about you and not about everybody else. Don't all speak at once.
Hi, I'm Patty.
Hi, Patty.
And my home group is the West L.A. Claire Mar Vista Family Center meeting, 7 o'clock on a Thursday evening. We're from Los Angeles. I'm one of those people who believe that when I got here, there's no real problems in my past life because the problem was only the alcoholic and the life we led with him. So when I began to do my four-step, which was a number of years down the road, because I'm a slow learner, I found out, there shouldn't be any problem doing this because I wasn't raised in an alcoholic home. I didn't have any alcoholics per se that I lived with as a young person. The alcoholic that I married wasn't one when we married. At least that's what I thought. So I really didn't have much past. And I was very confident that I could whip out a four-step very quickly. Until I found the little booklet that we have, and at the time it was a little booklet called The Blueprint for Progress. And it makes me, anyway, think about things like family relationships. Well, there was my parents and my sister, and that was it, and the dog, and not much else in terms of family. And we were fairly normal, I suppose. And, of course, I had no problems with them until one goes into this Blueprint for Progress and starts reading what they say about resentments, about attitudes, about feelings that one may have had about these people one lived with. And I discovered only through doing a four-step that I, too, had some very definite resentments against my sister. She was older. She got everything, you know, all the sort of typical sibling rivalry type of things that happen. And I actually had to write those down and begin to think about them. And then, of course, parents. Well, parents are parents, and many of you in here are parents. And unfortunately, children don't always like parents all the time, especially as we become teenagers. We sometimes have difficulty with parents. And I thought I had a good relationship with my parents until I hit the Blueprint for Progress. And then I discovered that, yes, I too had some resentments against my parents and some things that I thought were unfair to me. Heaven forbid anything in life should be unfair. And as I began doing this, I had to write about what I thought was unfair and my resentments about that. So even though, quote, I didn't come from an alcoholic home, I was a normal human being with normal feelings and emotions. And in alcoholism, I discovered that it's very easy for me to stuff all those and not feel them and ignore them and deny them. But that little booklet, I swear, saved my soul because it made me look at all those things which I thought were nothing. And they aren't nothing. They are a part of me, as you said, my history. And I had to take a look at them and realize that they, too, helped develop me into the person that I was at that time. Doing through the rest of the Blueprint for Progress at the time, it was slightly not only shaped differently, but it had a slightly different format than it does today. And I would highly recommend that for anyone to take those books out and use them. At least it worked with me as a basis for it. I also discovered that before I actually did my four-step, that I looked at the 12 steps, did the first three, and then began to consider character defects. And I would write on a specific issue. And when I actually went in to do my fifth step with my sponsor, I said, well, not only do I have the blueprint, but I also have all these little bits of paper over here. And she was a very non-controlling sponsor, and she said, well, bring it all in. And I thought, but, you know, they're little envelopes that you'd write in the car because something was happening, or the torn-off whatever paper bag that you found in the grocery store that you need to write on. And she said, bring them all. So I read not only out of the Blueprint for Progress, but also all those little bits of paper, and, you know, we're just sort of throwing them up in the air. Finally, after all that, she said, gee, you've done it all. And I felt much, much better. I've heard in our area, some people say they burn their four-step. after they redo the fifth on it. And I chose not to do that because I thought, that little book I can still use today. And there are things in there that were not applicable to me at the time, that I didn't have to write on, that today, maybe when I go back into it, I'll find one more thing has cropped up, and it is now applicable today. So for me, doing a fourth and fifth step are really based around that blueprint for progress. If you're new and haven't seen it, go to any literature table at any meeting, pick it up and take a look at it. Because among other things, it has this beautiful list, which I like the best, is a list of characteristics, the positive and the negative side. And when I got here, I had probably three feelings. Anger, resentment, and hate. Seems reasonable living with an alcoholic, as far as I'm concerned, because they are them, and no offense to anyone who have them who may be in this room. I discovered that there are more feelings in this world than three, and I didn't know that there were only that many more. There's a list of, I don't know, 50, 60, and I'm absolutely amazed. I have been through all of those. Sometimes I'm more on the positive side, sometimes I'm more on the negative side. And part of that little book helped me see and uncover and begin to actually identify feelings that I had that were something other than anger, resentment, and hate. So today I have a lot of them. And there's joy. There's freedom. There's a feeling of well-being. There's positive thoughts about self as well as about other people. And all kinds of fun things have come out of that little book. It's a marvelous little book. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Dawn. I'm from Lodi, Wisconsin.
Hi, Dawn.
I am very grateful to be attending my first international conference. My sponsor happens to be in the room also, so I'm very grateful to be here with her. The only thing that I have to say about steps four and five is in the Al-Anon program, that's when I began to live. It wasn't until I reached steps four and five that I really started discovering who I was as a person, as a wife, as a mother, as an employee. It helps me to understand why I think the way that I think, why I behave the way that I behave. And it wasn't until I finally got through that process, and it was not an easy process for me. It took about 3 months of almost weekly meetings to get through my steps with my sponsor. And the biggest thing that I've learned on that coming through is, although I went in it very reluctantly and did not want to do it, I postponed it for many, many months. After I started working with my sponsor. And getting through that and looking back, I can continue to look at what I discovered in those steps and use those as tools to life. And it has really helped relieve me of all of my past and my secrets, and that I was able to tell that to somebody who is very loving and kind. And every time I say, oh, I did it again, or oh, I behaved the same way again, they're helping me see that the progress is there, and yes, I did it again, but this time I admitted it much quicker, and I was able to see that that's not the behavior that I want to continue to have. It's not the type of mother that I want to continue to be, and being able to recognize that is the greatest sense of relief that I think that I've ever had. So I'm very grateful for two things: for the Al-Anon program, for doing my steps, and for a sponsor. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm grateful to be recovering in Al-Anon.
Hi, Karen.
I'm one of those double winners, and they decided for me which one I was. I have a resentment about it. So, I married an alcoholic, and one of us had to turn into an Al-Anon, and guess who it was. Yeah, well, I actually was granted a year of sobriety. I came in 21 years ago, and it lasted for about a year, but then I pretty much fell on my face. And I lost my first marriage due to my behavior in the marriage and blaming everything on that person and not taking any responsibility for myself. But, of course, I didn't see any of that until I was divorced, and I still had all that stuff with me, and I thought, how did that work out? So when I remarried for a second time, of course I repeated the same mistake, married an alcoholic the second time too, and I thought, well, I had luckily 5 years in between where I got to practice my Al-Anon program, and I had a very tough Al-Anon sponsor. Since I'm in the other program too, I decided that in Al-Anon I need to have a 100% Al-Anon sponsor. And so my Al-Anon sponsor has been in the program for many, many years. She's been married. She just celebrated her 24th anniversary married to her alcoholic, and she has a successful marriage. And I thought, if I want one of those, I'm going to have to find somebody who has one of those so they can share what they have with me. And she was pretty tough on me in the beginning and wanted me to go through this fifth step process with the World Service pages, right? And so she gave me the page for the resentments, and then she gave me the page for the fears, and she told me that I had to sit down. This was doing my fourth step with the fifth step pages, and she told me I had to sit in a room for half hour with no interruptions, doors shut, no phone, and I had to write down 100 fears. And if you can't come up with 100, then write them over again. And what that taught me was how many names my fear has, how many names it has, and how afraid I really was. So it also taught me what was my will and what was God's will. And I didn't like that much. I sort of had to go to some counseling over a few of those things because I really wasn't able to get rid of a lot of my resentments. And I'm grateful for the counseling because it really got rid of the mush and gush that the steps opened up for me. And I'm glad that this program teaches me that I can reach out and receive help from the community around us in all kinds of forms, from all kinds of people. And I think that's what it did, was it opened me up as a human being and taught me how to share with other people, because I just didn't know how to have relationships with other people. So I'm very grateful now today for my present sponsor and for her deep faith in a higher power. I have to say that what's grown the most in me over the years through the fourth and fifth step is my relationship with God. And it's taught me how to use the third step prayer. And so now when I need to turn something over, I just insert, you know, that person's name or that place's name. And I like the list that you get when you're doing your fourth step. My sponsor told me that I had to come up with as many assets as I did defects. And that was really hard. And I was so grateful for her presence because she shared with me all of the wonderful things about me that I didn't see in me, and taught me to depend on those and to turn to those. And I also learned through looking at my defects the little spiral that I would go down, you know, and that I would use those defects as coping mechanisms until I finally was so frustrated I was willing to do harm to others. And usually at that point I would have to confess to somebody, and luckily she was there, and then that would turn me around and get me back on the path to using what God gave me, because we're all God's children and God's gifts are within us, and that's what we're here to use. So I'm so grateful for the faith and the higher power in the program, because as years have gone by, I've learned more and more to depend on my higher power to help me out, and my higher power in all of you to keep helping me out. And I'm very grateful. This is my second international conference, and I think I'm addicted. But okay.
Hi, I'm Regina. I'm from Ireland, and my home group is Kilkenny in Ireland. And this is my first international conference, and I'm delighted to be here. Anna. Hi. I suppose the way I look on steps four and step five, I regard my past as my teacher. And like any good teacher, that should be one who encourages, is gentle, affirms. And I think the difficulty I had always pulling back from that blueprint for progress, and I was horrified to see they made a bigger one then after that. And I thought, oh, you know. And I suppose what will stop me for doing that was fear. And anyway, I got the courage. I had a very good sponsor, you know. She practices tough love, and that's very good for me. And what I found out was I wasn't such a bad person as I went through that. And I did use the blueprint for progress as my template for doing my step four and step five. I found out that, you know, I had great strengths there, that my family of origin was a very good family of origin. I didn't have any active drinking in my family of origin. But it took me about 2 or 3 years in the program before I realized that my family had the isms of the disease of alcoholism. And it came down through my father's line. And it was unspoken. I had aunts and I had uncles who were affected by the disease, but was never spoken about. But the behaviors were there. And I was a very quiet child up until I hit my teenage years. And I think I must have been quite a difficult teenager. And at the age of 16, I met my future husband through our shared interest in music. And he was everything I thought I wanted. And he was so loving and so gentle and so kind and so talented. And I was married to him for 19 years. And a lot of the time was very good. And then the disease of alcoholism reared its head in my life. And I very, very desperately, kicking and screaming, I suppose, in a way, utterly defeated, came to the rooms of Al-Anon. And I remember my first meeting. And I remember going in there. Of course, I arrived an hour early, not late, but an hour early, just to make certain I wouldn't miss it. And I went into this meeting, and there was just one woman there. And then another lady came about half an hour later. And this meeting was in danger of closing. And I remember there was this poor lady, and there was the other lady who came later. And two of us sat there just bawling our eyes out. And it was just so wonderful to be there with this other person. And the meeting has grown. We have nearly 30 sometimes at our meeting, which is big for Ireland. And I just don't know what I can say. You know, I just want to just give it all back to other people by giving it away. I hope it'll stay with me. This program has been wonderful for me. I've got, as they say, somebody else said, the toolbox to make sense of the confusion of life. I've had wonderful things happen to me in the last couple of years and some really difficult times, but I'm not afraid. And I want to thank you all for listening. And thank you all for your service.
God, you're all giants. Hi, I'm Kit, all the way from Naples, Florida.
Hi,
by train. When I started my inventory, I asked a total stranger to be my sponsor to help me with the inventory. And the first thing this lovely old lady did was say, write down your resentments. And I said, I don't have any. And she said, just try to write them down and don't make any phone calls while you're doing it except to me. And when I got to the 13th page of resentment... She said, you can quit now, and we can start. And we took the blueprint for progress, and I'm a journalist, and I know that when you interview somebody, you can't ask them a yes or no question, because then we're done. And that's what the blueprint was a million yes and no questions. So we used it as a way to get to know each other. We sat down for tea every Sunday, and she'd ask the question, and I'd answer yes or no, and we went on forever. Then she said, okay, you're done with that. Now we're going to start your inventory. You're a writer, she said. Write me your life story. So I wrote a chapter a week and kept them, thank God. But I wrote a chapter a week, and I would spit it out to her over tea on Sundays. And she was never horrified. And I finally, after 4.5 years, went to the International in Salt Lake City. And I went early. I booked myself a room in a hotel overlooking the convention center before anybody got there. And I said to myself, you're not going out of this room until you're done with your inventory. So for 3 days, I just wrote like mad, and I finished it all. And then I took the list of defects and assets, and I realized that through this whole process, I had answered them all. I had addressed every asset and defect. And then I went back and read her the whole mess again as a fifth step. And what she said was, you know, you're not half as bad as you think you are. You have put too many defects and not enough assets. And I ought to know, because now I know everything there is to know about you. And now when people come to me to sponsor, that's what I do with them. We go through the blueprint as a way to get to know each other, because one of the hardest hit areas of life to me from alcoholism was trust. I could not trust a soul because I couldn't rely on the unreliable people I was relying on. So trusting this absolute stranger with my inner everything taught me how to be intimate again with everybody. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Debbie, and I'm a grateful member of the Peace Al-Anon group in Brighton, Michigan.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. A little bit nervous coming up here. I came into Al-Anon because I married a recovering alcoholic, and the first time I went to Al-Anon, I kind of thought, well, you know, I really don't belong here because he's sober. So I didn't go back for about a year. Of course, I married him. And when I went back, the one thing I was very sure of is I was pretty angry. But let me tell you a little bit before I met this alcoholic. I went into the field of psychology. Originally, I was going to be a phys ed teacher. There was a lot of things happening in my life, and I liked psych, and I figured if I could figure out other people, I would be safe. And it didn't quite work. Al-Anon gave me a life. That was well over 28 years ago. And I wanted to share a couple of funny things with you today because I'm very grateful for Al-Anon in my life. I did my fourth step with the Blueprint of Progress. I think that's the name of it. And had it all pulled together, but I did not have a sponsor. I didn't think that sponsorship stuff was that important. So I decided to do it with the local Catholic priest. Well, the local Catholic priest had a drinking problem. This gets worse. It's just when the church was starting to change where you do the face-to-face thing, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going, oh, my God, I don't believe this, but I'm going to do it because they'll tell me I'll get well if I do this fourth step and this fifth step. Well, needless to say, I did not feel that great relief. My Al-Anon group said, you know, I don't know if it's so important that you write it down. And I thought, oh, thank you, Lord. And I never have. What I do know is that the anger is gone, that I have more days today of peace. I keep going to the meetings, and I keep reaching out, and people keep reaching out to me. And I think that's what this is all about. Because my character defects, I don't think, totally disappear. But today, I see them faster. I don't stay in my illness as bad as I used to. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. I have a real casual group that I belong to, and we work the steps. A lot of first step, because we're in a hospital. And we work the other steps also, but not in a formal kind of way. And for us, that seems to work. And I guess in listening to people today, I'm becoming aware of, I don't think there's a right or a wrong way to do this. It's just keep going. And that's what I'd like to invite all of you to do. Keep going to the meetings. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Peter.
Hi, Peter.
And I go to New Life Al-Anon in Windsor, Ontario. When I went through my fourth step, it was within about a year, year and a half of being in this program. And it was good enough then, you know, and some 20 years later, it's not quite good enough. And I've really started to look at some deeper things. And I've come to the conclusion that about me, and I'm on automatic. It's like I learn to ride a bike, and I get on the bike and I ride it. And I learn to drive a car, and I don't think about it. Well, I now recognize that I've learned a lot of things that I don't think about anymore. They are just there. And when I need them, they're there. Unfortunately, many of the things that are on automatic today are not real healthy. And unless I can what the step four does for me is makes me yank them out of the automatic mode and look at them. And when I put them back, they're not exactly the same. They can still be defective, but not as effective. So it's a situation that I'm in today at looking at defects and pulling them out of that mode and then re-examining them. I'm an engineer by trade, so I gotta have machines and gears and stuff like that in them. So it's like having a gear and a transmission that doesn't work. But the car goes forward. It just makes a lot of noise. It lurches a lot. It grinds when you shift. And that's what my life is like. It's got a lot of lurching in it, and grinding, et cetera, et cetera. And each time I take that gear out and look at it and regrind and file the teeth and put it back in, it doesn't grind as much. It still does. And the odd days, my car doesn't work very well. The odd days, it just sings and purrs. And that's where I am today. It's catching the feedback. I'm an electrical engineer, and I recognize in some of the circuits that I've designed, there's a feedback loop in it, and it goes back to the beginning and corrects whatever's happening at the beginning, so the whole thing settles down. And that's what I'm finding. It's almost like the tenth step now, where I'm picking it up, looking at it, feeding it back to myself, changing the thing just a little bit. It gets a little better, but it's not perfect, and I don't think I ever will be. This is one of the best machines I've ever seen, and the guy that designed it really did a good job. However, the people that programmed it didn't necessarily do the best job. And as one speaker said, then those are my parents and my wife and my kids and my friends, and they all helped me program this thing. And so what's been put in the program is not necessarily the healthiest, but it worked at the time that it was put in. It worked. And that's why it's there. It's there because I cope with my parents. I cope with people in my life. I just learned to cope. So those are good. It was good then. It's just a whole bunch of stuff today that's not good anymore. And that's what Al-Anon taught me. That not to condemn myself for the things that I've got. They were really good. Not to condemn my parents for what they gave me. They gave you their best ahead. They didn't have it. Nobody gave it to them. And they didn't have this program to sit back and think about it and kind of reprogram themselves. So, like I said, they and almost all the people in my life did absolutely the best they could with what they had. And so did I, with my children. You know, the fact that I got one that's alcoholic, that goes with the territory. The fact that I have a couple of brothers that are alcoholic, that goes with the territory. A wife that's alcoholic, that goes with the territory. A couple parents, I mean, I live in the tree. and so that brought out a lot of things and still does today. Get together with the right people at the right time and, man, I find out I live in the tree. And there's a lot of pain when you fall out of the tree. You don't fit anymore. You don't fit with many of the rest of the people. Fortunately, of the people I just mentioned, either half of them are dead at this point, and a good 60% of the rest of them are in EA or Al-Anon, which is really a good step in the right direction. And so there's less of that traumatic stuff that goes on, a lot more of the pleasure and funny stuff that goes on. I have a good life, a great life. Been retired for a couple of years. My wife and I should have killed each other by now, but we didn't. We're traveling right now. We'll be on about a month-long trip in this little box, about 30 feet long and about 8 feet wide. And maybe we'll kill ourselves on this trip. You know, I don't know. We've only had a little disagreement so far. It's been 3 days. That's not bad. So there's a couple more to come. And that's all part. Today, I seem to be very accepting of that. You know, things don't go right, so let it roll. It used to be fight with everything and try and get my way. And that's one of the defects that's sliding away. You know, the other one is getting mad for weeks at a time. I don't get angry anymore. I don't have rages anymore. That's all gone. That all disappeared. And that's all thanks to this program and talking about it and doing that fourth step. You know, doing that first inventory, and then I've kept it because it's really neat to go open that book that I wrote 20 years ago and see. I didn't hear no more. This is still here. Here's another one. You know, so I can pick out of that thing, out of those feelings. What are the ones that are still here? some of which are still causing me problems, and some of those that are just gone. And to me, that gives me a great point of reflection. It gives me a chance to take those things out of automatic again and look at them one more time. And if I don't, my higher power's got a real funny sense of humor. He takes it, every time I got something and it's serious, he sends it. If I don't learn it, he sends it back. And he eventually gets his 2x4 out and he whacks me in the forehead and he asks me if he got my attention. And, you know, he's done that a couple of times in my life. So things are going well, and I want to keep them going well. And, you know, we go off to Florida for people that were here from Florida. We go there for a couple, 3 months a year, and we're doing very well. And appreciate talking to you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Marcia, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon and to the Fellowship of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. Hi. My home group is Path to Recovery in Rockland County. It comes from my past. As a child, I was always very insecure, and it was my parents that I hold responsible for that as a child. And in fact, a lot of the things that I do today is always in the back, was always in the background, and I like to be more upfront, but in a healthier way, because either I was in the background or I was in your face, never in the gray area. And that's what I try to do every day, and that can really be a struggle for me, because I am a control dominant person, and I don't do that today, but I know it's there. It lays low. Very quiet, but it comes out, trust me, it comes out. And one of the things that I have to say is that it's because of the God of my understanding today that really truly keeps me in check. And when I think about the fourth or fifth step, I think about, if I didn't have God today, I could never have done any of it, and I could never look at myself. And it's those first three steps that have really allowed me to do the fourth and fifth step. And I do the fourth and fifth step many times, over and over again. And in doing it, I do my 10th step, but every day I look at myself, and every day I have to acknowledge if I'm on the right track or if I've gone astray. And I can do that because of my higher power, because he allows me, because I know I'm in God's care. And I like what somebody said before about there's no wrong or right way, because there isn't. It's about doing the next right thing for me. And I know you've heard it, and I've heard it so many times, that as long as I can be real, be authentic, I'm okay. And sometimes that is so, so hard. I heard somebody say today at this meeting about justifying our parents' behavior, like saying, oh, that's what they knew then, and I have such an issue with that. Because I still have an issue with my parents. I've acknowledged a lot, and I've started doing another fourth step with my sponsor, but she heard my tone when I started talking about my parents and said, you really need to still work on it, because I said I was forgiving them already, and by my tone, I really wasn't forgiving them. And I'm going to tell you, I still don't forgive them, because I'm so sick and tired of the excuses that they did the best they could, because maybe they did, but boy, did it affect me. And I work very hard today to try to make it different, and it does work, but I still have the remnants of, and those triggers that sometimes are so painful that I have to work through by the strength of this program, which helps to sustain me. But it's a continuous battle sometimes with it, and that's my real truth. A lot of times I like to say, oh, I'm over it, and I'm not over it. And that's why I came up here, because I know that I needed to be here so badly, because I want to get through saying, oh, I forgive my parents, because I really don't forgive them, not today. And I'm working on it, and thank you for all listening.
Hi, everyone. My name is Teresa Joy, and I'm a grateful member of Wednesday Noon Al-Anon in Windsor. Sitting here listening to different people about their fourth and fifth steps, I'm thinking back to the first one that I did, and it was regarding my dad especially, and I just continued to say to myself, he didn't know any better. And I remember reading something that we should be dealing with ourselves, not what other people did to us. I'm not sure where I read that. So as a result of that, I never really got in touch with the feelings and never allowed myself those feelings. And over the years, I am able to do that and keep it, try to have it in its place. I had to work through the feelings of it, however, and the anger of it before I could ever begin to let go of it. And one of the things that I read about and heard someone express back in the last maybe 6 months or a year, which has been very helpful to me, was expressed that we came to this planet, Earth, with a purpose, something in us that we wanted to perfect. Whether we don't know about forgiveness or need to deal with anger, whichever, or whatever. And that this is quite a philosophy. It helped me. I don't know if it makes any sense to you, and it doesn't matter. But what it did for me was to know, to think about the fact that maybe I chose the family and the parents that I live with in order to learn the lessons I needed to learn in this life. That helped me to really begin forgiveness, serious forgiveness, because then I'm taking the responsibility. Now what am I going to do about that? If I am responsible, and that's what I'm reading somewhere here, then I need to today, as an adult, be able to take the pains from the past and think of those as lessons. I try. I'm not always able to do that. But that's the basic premise that I try to deal with today, is to take the lessons from the past, the events of the past, and be more open to what can I learn from that. So that was the thought I had.
I'm Ann Harrington. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups, and I'm from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is a great meeting for me. I learned a lot about myself in doing my first, fourth, and fifth step. The first thing I learned is that even before I even started on that step is that procrastination was the number one, because I put it off and I put it off and I put it off. And I had a sponsor at that time that allowed me to do those things. And that's not the kind of sponsor that I need today. And so it just so happened that I moved. And I had to get another sponsor. And this woman asked me where I was on my fourth step, and I said, well, I'm really kind of afraid to do it. And she said, would you please get out the step and read what it says? It doesn't say a fearful moral inventory. It says a fearless moral inventory. And Anne, if you're afraid of doing step four, you have not done step three. I really thought about changing sponsors again right then. But we went back and we did step three together. And I realized that indeed I had not done step three. And by the time I got to step four, I was no longer afraid to do it. But then I found out that I had to do it in 2 weeks. We automatically set a date 2 weeks from that night to do my fifth step. And she told me in advance I was allowed one extension. But I could have no more extensions than that one. So I didn't take any extensions. And I did my fourth and I did my fifth. And the reason, one of the reasons that I didn't want to do that fifth step is because I just thought that I was so unique, you know, and I thought that she wasn't going to like me anymore and that she was going to tell everybody what I, you know, what my life was like. And at the end of my fifth step, she looked at me and she went, "So?" And then she started to share with me some of the things that she had done in her life, which were a lot worse than what I did. But the most important thing that she did with me in that fifth step is that we had to take every single one of those situations and I had to find two positive aspects out of every one of those negative situations. And she made me hunt for them until I found two positive aspects. Then after that was done, and I know everybody has different ways of doing it, but we stood in her bathroom and we ripped that fourth step up in tiny little pieces and we flushed that bugger down the toilet. She had actually had a situation of someone that she knew where the woman saved her fourth step, and she passed away, and her husband found the fourth step. So we don't save fourth steps where I'm from. But then the worst part was is that every time I tried to go back over some of that stuff in that fourth step, she would always tell me, "So what? What are you going to do about it now?" She would not let me go back and do it. And then she'd say to me, "Remember, you flushed that down the toilet." So now what I do is I have a spring cleaning. And I do one fourth step on the last year every spring. And I get all that stuff out, anything that's hanging around, you know. I'm able to get all that stuff out, and I do a fifth step with her, and then we flush that bugger down the toilet, too. But the thing is, there's no growth for me if I keep reliving the past. One of the things that she told me, because I had a lot of issues with my parents, and one of the things that she told me is, you know, they did these things to you. And they were responsible for doing those things to you. You are responsible for doing something about it. And so I've worked really, really hard on that, to do something about it. And to be able to, I can actually... Last October, I went and spent 3 weeks with my parents. And that was a miracle. And the miracle was is that I left after 3 weeks, and none of us were dead. Nobody had killed anybody. I found out exactly where all the Al-Anon meetings were. And I drove my own car. So that when things got bad, I could go, "Oh, gosh, I got to go to the drugstore. I'll be back in 20 minutes. And off I went with my books and my cell phone. So all I know is that for me is that I haven't taken one fourth step. I haven't taken one fifth step. I've taken many. And it works for me to do that. I'm free. I am free of the past. And if I'm not free of the past, it's my own fault. So I'm doing pretty good today. Thank you very much, and I'm glad to be here.
Hi, I'm Helen. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon from San Francisco. And I have to give a little West Coast twist on this. I was down on the beach in Mexico and watched these Indians come down from the mountains and go onto the beach and take some things. And I don't know exactly what they were doing, but I got this real sense that they were doing a fifth step there, casting some things into the sea. So I came back to San Francisco and I thought, you know what, when the new year starts, I'm going to go out to the beach and write in the sand one character defect that I really want to get rid of. And first I started with things that were easy to write in the sand, like fear, you know, it doesn't take much with a stick to put that on. And then what I did is I waited for the sea to come in and wash it away. And if you've been at the beach, you know that at first it comes in and then it's sort of blurry. And then a big one comes in and it's completely gone. The hardest one to get rid of was procrastination because it's so long to write. But that's gone. And I'm so grateful to be here today. And I came here specifically because I'm sponsoring a woman who's having a really difficult time forgiving her parents, who sound like truly dreadful people. And I want to thank everyone who brought that up, because as her sponsor, I sit and listen and pray for the guidance on how she can use this program to rid herself of that legacy. So I thank you all very much.
Hi, everybody. My name is Pat Dolan, and I'm from Brookfield, Ohio. Well, I was sitting there, and I'm like, I'm not getting up. I'm too far in there. I'm going to bother all these people, you know, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, now I'll sit here. And then all of a sudden, you know, I keep getting this nudge, like, get up there, get up there. So that's God talking to me. So me standing here today is truly a miracle, because I was one for not speaking at all. When I was in high school, I'll never forget this. I was in high school reading a report. And I'm like this, and it's like this, and I'm trying to read it. And that's how I was for public speaking. So I'm a nervous speaker, too. And that's okay today. The fourth step has given me the freedom to be me. It's given me the freedom to cry. It's okay to cry. I used to hide my tears. We were told not to cry at home. We were told to keep secrets. Doing the fourth step gave me that freedom to get rid of all that negative stuff and replace it with something positive, something good. And the fourth step also, I've learned my past or events today. They no longer can harm me. And I hung on to that a very long time. But they're just events in my life, and they made me who I am today. And it's really neat, because when I'm at a meeting and I see a newcomer and I hear a newcomer share, newcomer. A newcomer. Pickle. So anyways, as they're sharing their story, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I felt that way. I did that. And it's just really neat to grab them at the end of the meeting and say, hey, you're not alone. I did that too, you know. I felt that way. It's okay. because that's what was done to me when I first walked into these rooms. You know, someone grabbed me and said, it's okay to cry for a year when you're the, you know. One time I was at the meeting, I'm like, when do I quit crying? They all laughed, and I think it was very funny, you know. And I still cry today, and it's okay. I cry for happiness more than anything, more than sadness, more happiness, because I'm so grateful this program has saved my life. I look at doing the fourth step as weeding my flower garden. I'm a flower nut. I just love my flowers. And every spring I go out there and I look and I'm like, okay, what is that? Is that a flower or is that a weed? And the fourth step's the same way. Is that a character defect or is that a good thing I want to keep? And that's how I look at doing my fourth step. So it's not something that I'm going to be afraid of to do. Because I know when I do my garden, my flower garden in the spring, once I weed all that stuff out, it just makes everything else grow a lot more. And that's how the fourth step is for me. When I weed out those character defects, then I can grow more spiritually and emotionally. And so it's a good thing, you know, and that's how I look at doing the fourth step. And there's no when, where, how. Just whenever you want to do it, you do it. You know, there's no set pattern to this, you know. If you feel like you need to do a fourth step, you just do it, you know. Call your sponsor. Get a priest who's not drinking, you know. You know. But that's what's really neat. We learn all this free information from all of us. How awesome is that, you know. But the fourth step, I had a hard time doing it. I was fearful of it because I kept a lot of shame-based secrets. Boy, I had a lot of secrets. We were taught it's at home. Whatever goes on in this house stays in this house. You don't tell anybody. And I lived like that for a long time. And then I started sharing some stuff when I married a man who was actively drinking, and I thought that was normal because that's how I grew up. And I started sharing some stuff with him. Well, that wasn't a good thing because I was sharing it with somebody that was very sick emotionally, and he would use that information to get to hurt me. So then I clammed up again. It wasn't until I came into Al-Anon that I started trusting people, and a sponsor was the first one. Then that was the thing. I was trusting the wrong people. And Al-Anon taught me to trust the right people. And I still sometimes get burnt, but it's okay. That's how we learn, you know. I mean, it's not a perfect world. But I'm just so grateful to be here. And this is my first Alcoholics Anonymous International. I went to Salt Lake City, and that was awesome. And I was really looking forward to here. And I'm going to tell you, Toronto is such a beautiful city. I'm so glad we're here. And I love you all, and thank you.
My name is Paul, and I come from Ithaca, New York, and I'm a member of their Sunday morning 9 o'clock group.
Hi, Paul.
I came here actually to find out what a fourth step was. I've been here in Al-Anon for about a year, and not quite find out what it is, but get some hints on how to do it, because I haven't really gone through all of the motions of it. I've just started to get, I mean, I have a sponsor, and we're developing a relationship. But he doesn't push me probably as much as I need to be pushed. And what I really appreciate, just in terms of what I've heard, is if I don't own the past and bring it into the present, I'll be run by it. And I'm reminded of this quote that I was reading in Guam probably 30 years ago about a book about Est. And this phrase was, "What you resist persists and runs you like a machine." And that always stuck with me. And I think that the fourth step for me is about that, but it's been a variation of that as I've been listening today, because it seems like if I can't learn to own the past that I had and be with it and almost embrace it and appreciate it as a part of my journey, then I'm still making it wrong, which means I'm making me wrong and making everything in my past wrong, which means that I'm carrying that in me here and now. And so I must not be detached enough to be here if I'm still stuck with that. So that was one of the things, is that I almost feel like I have to appreciate the past along with separating what appears to be a label of defect from what appears to be a label of asset. Because I have a hunch that they're really not different. They're just perspective differences. Once I get unstuck from the defect, all of a sudden it becomes an asset. I think that's what's going to happen. I'm reminded just sitting here about the word appreciation keeps coming to me. About I use the word embrace, but unless I can appreciate my past, then I'll never get past it. And so for me, I had this nudge 4 years ago. My job was ending in California, and I went back to my hometown and now live in the same house that I grew up in. And so I volunteered to be with my mom and my dad, and I knew that something was going on, but I didn't know what. And you know how you just kind of get told to do something, and all of a sudden you find out why later. And 6 months later, my dad started getting sick, and I became the primary care person for him. But in that process, I got to be with first him unbelievably intently, and now my mother in a totally different form. But owning who they are as loving beings, rather than my labels of who I thought they might have been because of the way I interpreted the shit in my life that I called shit then, that's what I think I've been trying to hold. And so maybe I'm in the process of percolating the first step, and I haven't gone through that blue and white book and the other stuff. But this has been a really powerful time for me, so thank you very much.
I was sitting there and listening to everybody and just, you know, thankful that I am a member of Al-Anon. My name is Betty, and I'm a member of the Now There's Hope group, and we're from Cleveland, Ohio. And, you know, when I grew up, I was thinking, you know, everybody's talking about their parents. I used to tell my mother, "Are you sure you're my mother?" I said, "Because I think I belong to a rich family, and when are you going to take me back?" And when I look at my mother today, and, you know, when you're a parent, you learn a lot of things, because when you're growing up, you look at your parents as one thing, and then when you become a parent, your children pass down the things that they said that, you know, why you could have did this, you should have did that. But then when you're a parent, you realize you do the best that you can with what you have. I once heard a lady say that, you know, her mother wasn't very loving and caring and a feely person. And when she finally, you know, went and talked to her mother, she found out that her mother came from an abusive family and that she was put out when she was 13. And the only thing that she could say that when she had children, that she was going to provide a place for them to stay and food for them to eat. And when you look back, you know, at people and the things that they go through, you can see why they're the way that they are, but they're the best that they are at that time. I was in a meeting one time, and I heard this lady saying, and really, you know, I really thought about it, and I said, who has the power? She said she had been married for 24 years, and her husband had died, and she still resented him, and she wanted to go out and rebury him back up. And I said to myself, who has the power? That man is dead. And forgiveness is not for the other people. It is for us to forgive ourselves for the things that we go through, and especially for the things that we put ourselves through. I was sharing with a lady there. She's saying this is her first convention. This is like my fifth convention. And I learn every time I come here, you know, how grateful I am to be a member of Al-Anon, and how grateful when I sit at my home group and, you know, people look at you and you kind of take them, you know, you don't really think they're watching you. And this one girl, she said something to me, and she said, you know, when I told you something, you didn't go, ah. She said, you just sat there. And I didn't think, you know, when I sit there and I'm there at my meetings, I'm there for a purpose. You know, God put me in these rooms for a reason. And yes, I came in here because of my alcoholic, because it was like, you know, when they used to go over the steps, I would say to myself, you know, how come they're here for 20 years? How come they're here for 5 years? They must be really stupid, you know? And then I had to realize, you know, when I kept coming back, that they're here for a reason. And yes, I am a seasoned member of the program, and I'm here for a reason. And sometimes I do get complacent, and sometimes I don't want to do another fourth and fifth step. But I have a sponsor that when I'm going through something, I'm able to pick up that phone, I'm able to talk to her then and let her know what it is that I'm going through right now. And I've chosen another lady to be like a second sponsor to me, because people have things in them that, you know, little pieces that we want to get. Some may be more spiritual than others, and some may have other issues that are going on. And it's certain things when I do sponsor people, if it's something that I have not went through, I try to channel them to somebody else that can deal with them, because if it's something I haven't experienced, I can't share with them. I don't know what to say to them. And one of our girls in our meeting, she had to go seek professional help. And a lot of times people don't want to talk about that, because there are things that people come to us with and we don't have the answers for them. And sometimes they have to seek that outside help to go and get the help that it is they need to get. When I was going through my first divorce, because I am married to another recovering alcoholic, but he practices his program to the best of his ability, I was going through some things. And my first husband, as a result of his disease, he was shot and he was paralyzed. And one of the guys that was in the program, he was a psychologist. And the eerie thing about that was that he used to head over a hospital of people that were spinal cord injured people. And when I shared with him some things that were going on in my life, he was able to say to me, you know, he said, Betty, people see this man as one way, but we really know how these people can be. And to me, you know, the program works if we work it, and people just appear sometimes in our life when we need those moments where we need to say some things to some people. And trust, trying to find someone you trust, sometimes that's hard because, you know, when we look at people, we want certain things in them. And like the lady said, we go through this procrastination stage where it's like, you know, this person doesn't have this, or maybe I shouldn't do that. But the willingness and the ability to just share a little bit about yourself, and when you do that fourth and fifth step, it's not like writing it, this thing, all the life things, and I have to share all this with somebody. And this program I learned is a continuation, and every day I learn something different about me. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Larry. Lisa says I'm Larry from South Orange, New Jersey. I'm in the same area as Roland. And it's very good to see him. I haven't seen him in a few years, and I'm glad I came to this meeting. Fourth and fifth step. You know, before I could get to the fourth step, I had to do the first three. I don't know why, but it helped. I was powerless, and I didn't believe that because I tried to control alcoholism. I used to take the bottles and mark them with pencil lines. And, you know, nobody drinks below a pencil line. And that didn't work. So then I would go and switch to ink, because ink you can't erase. You know, and that didn't work. So then I finally went to the magic marker, and then the bottle was empty. And then I would start on the next bottle. And I'd keep on going and doing things like that. I knew my life was unmanageable. But that didn't help me with that second step, because I wasn't insane. The other person was insane. And I had to get over the sanity of the second step. That eventually I came, I said, okay, I guess this will help me, you know. But I always told people I was unmanageable. I was never insane with the crazy things that I was doing. Like the other thing I did with liquor. I was involved in the military. I spent my life in the National Guard. And we used to go to the Army Post, and you buy liquor with no taxes or anything. And I would buy them and watch my wife drink. And when she got finished, half the bottle, I would pour it down the sink. And then I would go back and buy it again, because she saved money on taxes. And that was the whole thing about it. Eventually, I got into the higher power on that third step and tried to turn my life over. And then got into the fourth step. The fourth step, and Roland may remember this, was before the Blueprint for Progress, was a one-sheet step. And all I had was character defects on it. And it was an entire list of defects and, you know, assets. And I checked all the ones on the left-hand side, which was defects, and maybe one or two on the positive side. And that was my first step. And as soon as I did it, I took it and I put it away. And never went back to it. And then right after that, they came out with the blueprint, the smaller version of the big version we have today. And I went through that. And I answered everything yes or no. And talk to somebody about it, they says, oh, well, maybe you better do it a little bit deeper than that, you know, than just the yes or no answer and continue it on. One of the things that I found out that was wrong with me was that when I did the fourth step again with this blueprint for progress, we were having a particularly tough time. It was in the summertime, and I said, I've got to do something with this fourth step, and I'm going to solve this whole thing. And I took my tent and my camping gear and everything else, and I went up to one of the state parks. And being a perfectionist as I am, I took my typewriter with me, and I sat at the table, and I typed this whole thing down, you know. I stayed there 3 days doing this thing, and I would get so tired, and I'd stop and I'd walk around the lake, and then I'd come back and I'd start typing again, and then I'd walk around the lake on the other side and everything else. And I was very proud of that because I spent all this time in this perfectionism, you know, getting my step down, you know, and boy, I'm finished with this, you know, and it's never going to happen again. I don't have to do it. I did go to the fifth step, and that was a disaster. Talked with a fellow who was my sponsor, and the disaster about was the fact that I went to his house. He said, oh, I finally set up the time and everything else. I went to him, and I said to him, I have this manuscript here with the, you know, my fourth step and everything else. All he did was talk for half, three-quarters of an hour, and he said, that's it, goodbye. And I never opened my mouth, you know. So it was a real disaster for me. Since then, it has changed. You know, I've done a number of four steps over the years. I have gray hair, and I came in Al-Anon a number of years ago. So I've been around for a little while, but I do them periodically. I find them extremely helpful for me. In fact, I'm in the middle of another one now. I do not bring it here to the International because there's too many other things to do, too many meetings to go to. But I do work on it, and I don't do it all at once, and I don't type it anymore. I may use the computer a little bit, but I really don't get involved with it the way I did. And I share as I go along. Even if I'm not complete the whole four-step, I find that there are areas that I can go ahead and talk about. And somebody talked about some old things that you keep on with you. It took me about three fourth steps to go through before I finally admitted or tried to admit that, or I did, actually. A thing that I had done years before, it was a secret that I had years before that I never shared with anybody, and it had to do with lying, and it had to do with a fellow that I was worked with, was my boss. And I had thrown out some material that was in my shop. I was a carpenter, and I had a carpenter shop, and some things that he had stored there for years and everything. And I'm a neatnik bug, you know, so I threw everything out. I was cleaning my shop one day, and I got tired of these things in there, and I threw them away. And I swore to him I never took it. I never got rid of him. And eventually, I never did go back to him. And that's the secret that I had for years and years and years. And I finally shared it in the fourth step. And in the meantime, the fellow died. And the only thing I could do was stand at his coffin and say, Jack, you and I will talk in heaven, because that's where it's going to happen, you know. And I need my higher power to help me to get through that. So that's one of the things that happened. Another thing that just came recently to me, about 2-3 years ago, had to do with parents. Now, I was in Al-Anon about 6 years, 5-6 years, whatever, early on. And I kept on saying to myself, my mother needs Al-Anon. What is wrong with her, you know? And it never dawned on me. Then I said to myself, if she needed Al-Anon, my father must have been an alcoholic, but would never admit that he was an alcoholic. And about 3 years ago, we worked on that. This was some professional stuff. Besides my fourth step, it was a professional fourth step where I went back to my childhood. And I wrote a letter to him. And I wrote a letter to him that he wasn't there when I grew up. And that's very important. And when my father died early, and I think alcoholism had something to do with it, although it was always his heart was what really gave out on him and stuff like that. But anyhow, I wrote this letter, and the day I finished with this thing, I had gone home. I did it over in New York City, and then I came home to Jersey. The next day was Sunday, and it was Father's Day, and I went to the cemetery, and I sat at the headstone in front of him, and I sat there, and I cried through the whole letter. I couldn't stop crying. But I finally got it out that here he was, you know, that he wasn't there for me. And I understood that now. And I didn't blame him. You know, he did what he was doing and whatever thing, and that was like 40 years before and everything else. But I had to do that, and I've been so peaceful with my father ever since. Very, very peaceful, that I went to the cemetery, I wrote the letter, and I went to the cemetery and I talked to him. And I've shared that before, and I shared that at a spiritual weekend one time with a fellow. And he went home from the spiritual weekend on Sunday at noontime and drove all the way to the other end of Long Island. And for you that don't know that part of the country, it's a good trip. It's a good trip. And he went out and he did the same thing at his father's grave. And I saw him a year later at the weekend again. And he said to me, he thanked me all over the place. He thanked me all weekend when I saw him, that I had shared that. And I offered that out to people because it has really helped me, and I know it's helped some other people. Is to write a letter to your parents and tell them. And I wrote a letter to my mother, too, you know. And, you know, areas that I thought were everything. And I thought I had good parents, you know. I had a house and we had food and I got to school and everything else. And I share that. And I share that in my meetings when we get on to the fourth and fifth step. Fifth steps, I have done a number of, you know, I do them as I go along. And there's two things that I think are critical on both of these steps. And one is my relationship with my higher power. And I have what I feel is a pretty good one. And it took me a while to get to that. It took me 2 years in Al-Anon before I was able to really start a relationship with my higher power. And I thought I had this relationship all my life. So I did that. And the other one is having a sponsor. Sponsor is extremely important for me to be able to talk to somebody and to walk through these two things. Thank you.